Hello, Meat Popsicles. Why don't you grab your multipass, a drink, and come sit with us?
Let's pick each other's brain. We want you to be part of our intimate conversation about science fiction topics.
Let's do this. Join us, and let's talk about science fiction topics in books, movies, TV shows, and games.
At Science Fiction Remnant, you are invited to listen in.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And don't forget your multipass.
Hey, nerds. We understand you. Drop those controllers. Lose the wizard hat. And ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Ken Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome, everybody, to another edition of Geek Cave Podcast Gaming. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad.
Now, happy holidays to you. Just a quick reminder that Yakuza, Bayonetta 2, Dead Rising 4, Die Hard Trilogy, and Batman Returns on the SNES all count as Christmas games.
Huh.
There you go.
So now you know. So.
The more you know.
So let's thank our sponsors real quick. Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today. They got free shipping on all orders within the U.S. Make great stocking stuffers, these t-shirts do. Or just normal gifts anyway. Plus, great t-shirt, sweater, hoodie designs on everything geek chic. So if you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, maybe something in between, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. And Gamefly, with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want, and then when you're done, all you gotta do is send it back with the postage paid envelope. They'll send you a new one, or you can keep it forever and pay a lot less than those in-store prices. And right now, when you buy an Arcade 1-Up arcade cabinet from the Gamefly store, I've got two of them, and they're really nice, you can get up to $50 towards any used game, or collectible, or accessory. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Boyos, how you doing?
Oh, not too bad.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
It's Halloween again?
Chad.
Yo.
What you been up to?
Check it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Demo Derby!
My spouse found me a new point-and-click adventure game. Unusual Findings, the video game. We got on the PS4, though it's apparently also available on the Switch and Xbox and Steam and everything else. And it is a game that is in glorious 8-bit graphics and seems to be a love letter to both the point-and-click adventures of LucasArts as well as the pop culture of the 80s. In other words, Darren will probably love it.
Okay.
In the game, you play as Nick, a recently grounded teen who sneaks out of his house to meet up with some friends so you can watch unscrambled pay-per-view. Go ask your parents what that means, kids.
Mm-hmm.
Puzzles are solved by clicking everywhere on the screen until you find things that can be combined to advance the story, and I regret to inform you that though there is a zip line to complete the first puzzle, there are no chickens anywhere in sight. There are, however, a crap ton of references to the 80s, from Back to the Future posters to Atari games played on the Nintendo Entertainment System, and I would imagine that beyond the demo, there are probably a lot more of these references to experience. Controls are smooth. I would have liked the option to use the arrow keys to highlight the things that could be manipulated in a scene, but that's me being whining because I didn't play these types of games. And it took me an absurd amount of time to get out of the first room, and then only after my spouse looked up the answer.
Aw.
So get the demo. If the humor suits you, get the game. If the rest of the game is like the demo, then you'll know in the first 10 minutes if it's for you. For me, just the demo.
Okay. All right. Cool. Justin.
Yo.
I was looking at your browser history, and I know that you've been spending a lot of time on Reddit. What's up there?
So,
As many of you know, I don't get to play many games, but I do have a wide breadth of knowledge for the gaming community that I think is useful, and I go through Reddit's Ask Games to try and find questions that I think could use an answer in a little segment I like to call...
Ask Justin. The Geek Cave podcast and its associates, including Justin, do not condone the advice given in this segment.
Thank you, Nigel. So, this month's question is... Looking for games to play with my girlfriend.
Oh, God.
No. I'm just messing with you. I've done that joke to death. I couldn't resist.
Okay.
This month's actual question is, games that let you have / care for children. Holiday edition.
Oh, no.
There's Jingle My Bells, Santa Claus Is Coming to Town, The Naughty List, Jack Frost Nipple on Your Nose, Roast Your Chestnuts Over an Open Fire, Riding the Reindeer, Santa's Little Helper, Stuffing the Stocking, Eating Your Milk and Cookies, I Have a Big Present for You, Getting Something Off Your Wish List, Hope Your Special Present Is Inside My Box, I've Been Extra Good This Year, Show Me Your North Pole, Miracle on Insert Your Street Name Here, Licking the Candy Cane, Show Me Your Sugar Plums, Tis the Season to Be Naughty, Let's Scrooge, When I Think About You I Touch My Elf, Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, It's Mrs. Claus to You, Your Stocking Is Hung,
okay.
Come Sit on Santa's Lap, Santa Baby, Oh Baby, Yes Baby,
okay, all right. Okay.
Baby, It's Cold Outside, But Hot in Here, My Friends Call Me Prancer, But You Can Call Me Vixen, and lastly, Oh, Christmas Tree.
You know, I was just about to get the explicit tag taken off.
You know,
it was going to happen.
It has been X days.
Thank you, Justin.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
On a lighter note, I did get another Gamefly game in that I picked solely based on the cover.
Oh, it's time for it's time for that. All right.
Yes. So like Chad's Demo Derby, this was also a point and click game. But instead of 8-bit, I would say it's like 64-bit. It's called Thimbleweed Park. And it is a mystery game. You start the game as an undetermined person who has to go to a specific location to meet up with a shadowy contact. While you're on your way, you encounter a drunk bum, and you get to interact with the bum, and you have three options of things you can say. One, I'm supposed to meet somebody down here. Have you seen them? Two, I have to go. I'm sorry I could not offer you a drink. And three, are you a victim of the inferior American social support system?
Okay.
This nameless character gets killed off shortly after, and then you take control of two FBI agents, swapping back and forth, collecting clues, taking pictures. I ended up putting the game back in the Gamefly case after about 20 minutes of play because you couldn't use the arrows to select things, and you had to use the left stick, and it took forever to get across the screen. Just to move, because it wasn't just selecting the options. You had to go and equip things and then do it or click on something, and it was just monotonous.
Yeah, I wish that they would have sensitivity options for some of those, you know.
Now, I will say, the humor was enjoyable, and I think it would have been best suited on a PC. So maybe if I can find it on Steam for very cheap or even free, I might try it again.
Okay. All right, we got to come up with a name for that segment, you know, like Skin Deep, but something
I thought I was game-related. Judging a game by its cover.
Okay, I mean, yeah, that is kind of on the nose. I didn't know if we wanted to be a little bit more creative or not.
I wasted my creativity with that list I made up.
Okay, that's fair. All right, cool. Well, thank you. And real quick, before we go any further, I just wanted to remind everyone that, again, big thank you to those who helped out with our Extra Life campaign. brought in a little over $2,000, which considering that considering the times are a bit tough, that is still amazing. And thank you so much. But one of the incentives, if you guys remember, was that if you donate $250 or more, you got to be on the show. So we had one person donate that much money. And I don't think they realized that that meant they had to be on the show. Nope. So instead, they have donated their time to someone that you have heard in our Deep Cave Kids videos, Red. And Justin, you know the guy rather well, so I'm going to let you handle it from here.
All right. Hi, Red.
Hi.
So welcome to the podcast.
Nice to be here.
Nice to have you.
It is my understanding that you want to review a game for us.
Yes.
All right.
It's called Sonic Frontiers.
Ooh.
Okay, that's the new one.
Yeah. So typically the reviewer just kind of takes off and runs, but since this is your first time, you want some help with this?
Sure.
Okay, so we'll just ask you some questions about the game and you just kind of answer it as we go along. Sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Darren, why don't you start off with some questions?
Okay. Tell me about Sonic Frontiers, because most of the Sonic games that I love are the old school, like, two-dimensional side-scrolling things. What's Sonic Frontiers like?
It's a 3D Sonic game where you start out in the digital world. You're the only one who's made it out. And now you have to go through the digital world to find the Chaos Emeralds, defeat giant robots to free your friends.
Okay, so something happens to Sonic's friends and they get caught up in the digital world. They must have signed up for, you know, Twitter or something like that. That's what happened to me once.
Well, that clearly explains why everything is swirling a toilet.
Can you give us just like a spoiler-free review, and then as we ask questions, if spoilers come up, we've already given the fair warning.
I'll say this. If you like Legend of Zelda or Super Mario Odyssey, you might like this game.
Ooh.
It's a free-world game with a little more direction to tell you what to do.
That's some pretty high praise.
That's...
And like most games,
got me
you
intrigued.
Don't have to. But if you want to get this game over with, you're going to have to follow the storyline.
Seems fair. Now, how does this compare to, like, Sonic Colors?
Well, in Sonic Colors, it's more of you go through these, like, the classic Sonic games, you go through these levels.
Mm-hmm.
In Sonic Frontiers, there basically are no levels.
Okay. So it's like a legit open world thing.
It's like Skyrim, gotta go fast.
Kinda, yeah. I saw him play in some the other day, and yeah.
So what'd you name your horse?
There is no horse.
He is the horse.
You said Legend of Zelda.
No,
there's always a horse.
No, imagine like Link just running really fast.
Yeah.
Oh, like doing the.
The bunny hood from Ocarina of Time. That.
Got, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They gave carrot to Link, and Link went faster.
Oh.
Yeah? Yeah?
Eat the carrot. Eat the carrot. So, if there's no levels, how do you know what you're doing from one thing to the next?
It has there's a little thing that's telling you what to do. Like
an indicator or something?
Yeah, like, if you do something that it tells you to do, it'll be like, collect more keys to unlock the Chaos Emeralds or something like that.
Okay, little objective markers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so like in Mario Odyssey, you had the friendly mode or the easy mode or whatever, where it had kind of a thing to tell you what to do next.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's basically it, but it's, you don't start, you always have that.
Okay. That helps me. I've never played a Sonic game outside of the first level of the first game.
It's the best level of that first game.
Well, somebody wanted the controller and I handed it to them and I watched them play the second level of the first game and I'm just like, you know what? I don't want to be a part of this.
And now the Marble Hill Zone and it just goes down. from there. If I have a copy of it somewhere, I'll loan you Sonic Mania. That one's good.
Now, do bear in mind, I mean, that was on the Sega Genesis.
I had the blast processing, Sega. So...
But there were three buttons.
Yeah.
Who needed three buttons?
It was just
there was the Nintendo. You had a direction pad and you had two buttons. The third button, what more could you possibly do?
Any more thoughts, Red?
I don't know. I'm kind of enjoying watching Chad make Darren die a little bit inside.
I'll say this. It is fun, but some of it is kind of annoying.
Okay, how so?
Well, one of the missions that you have to do is round up these little creatures. And on the second world, you're in a desert island.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, when they drop little bombs, and you have to guide them in a certain amount of time, but these bombs create sandstorms, which makes it impossible to see.
So when you say desert island, it's actually an island made up of desert?
No, it's made of sand.
That's what I mean, as opposed to an island where there's just nobody on it.
No, not a deserted island, literally a desert island.
Apparently. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I'm always on the lookout for a desert island.
Ooh.
Same here.
Yeah. Can we get like a strudel, a strudel cake island or something like that? That'd be nice.
Ooh, a pound cake peninsula.
Ooh, pound cake peninsula. Fritos Fjord.
So in terms
of the
game,
it's got to start with a J. So a Jolly Rancher Fjord.
There you go.
So in terms of the game, when you say it's kind of like, well, as Justin or Darren said, Skyrim got to go fast.
Yeah.
Do you get to level up your character? Like, are there things that skills and abilities that you level up for Sonic? I assume you're playing Sonic.
Like, the first thing you get is a thing called a Psyloop, where you can leave a trace around you. If you make a circle around, it'll give you rings from the ground occasionally. Hmm. Also, if, like, an enemy is blocking, you can do that to break their block.
Okay.
Nice.
See, I like leveling up abilities and
it's
so forth.
It's so satisfying.
Also, it's a very... There are little Western creatures RPG that you thing. Can trade with I think his name is Elder Coco, which you can upgrade your speed or ring capacity. You originally start out with being able to carry 400 rings.
That's nice. A lot of rings.
That's 300 more than you got in Sonic 1.
I couldn't tell you.
And there are special seeds that you can trade with Hermit Coco to upgrade your strength and defense.
Okay.
Cool.
See, that makes me more interested in the game.
Yeah.
Not just the gotta go fast because I couldn't care less. I play games where you move very slow.
Yes.
Plotting, even.
Yes.
You know, best level of Star Wars Force Unleashed is the first one with Darth Vader. Do you run? No, you do not.
No.
You stalk fearsomely and throw Wookiees against trees.
Vader didn't need to be in a hurry.
No. He doesn't need to be in a hurry. So this kind of thing, it has me intrigued. All right. So
also, if you get enough energy points, there's this little bar that you fill. If you get enough of those, you can buy the thing like the Psyloop.
Okay.
And the one that costs 50 of those, it gives you, after you've been hit, if you press B or X, it'll heal you.
Oh, nice.
Oh, cool.
That's handy.
Okay. So, So, like Zelda plus Sonic.
Yep.
With a bit of Skyrim.
Mm-hmm.
Level up system.
Yep.
Reminiscent of God of War.
Yeah.
But probably no giant axe.
No, that takes points off. But there is Big the Cat and there's a fishing minigame.
All right. So,
yeah.
Because you're selling it really well. Is this a be like me, a don't be like me, or a...
Yeah. Would you recommend it to everybody, to some people? What? You
Who
played
play
it. Do you
this?
Want people to be like you and play it?
If you like all the stuff that it gives you, I recommend it to people, but some parts of it are going to be extremely annoying.
Fair enough.
Okay. Okay, like, so a be like me conditionally.
Fair enough.
Like every single game ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Red, thanks a lot for stopping by, Red.
Thank you, Red.
We really appreciate it.
Bye.
All right, and again, thanks, Red, and thanks to the person who donated $250 to our Extra Life campaign that allowed Red to be our guest today. So, well, I've got a couple of games that I got thoughts about, but Chad, I know that you've got a game you got thoughts about, too.
Oh, do I?
And I probably have some thoughts to share with them, but please, go ahead.
God of War! Ragnarok!
All right.
I've started calling God of War 2018 God of 4.
Ah.
Because it's a fourth one. There you go. Ahead.
There you go.
So if God of War Ragnarok is the last game, I am satisfied. I said the same thing with God of War 3, and I said the same thing with God of War 2018.
Mm.
I am and have always been truthful about these things.
Okay.
You know, if they had not made another God of War after God of War 3, I would have been perfectly satisfied.
Okay.
And after God of War with that story, I would have been perfectly satisfied.
God of 4 was good.
And now with Ragnarok and its ending, I am perfectly satisfied. And if they never make another one, it's okay. God of War Ragnarok takes place 3 years after the events of the previous game. Fimbulwinter's here, Freya's trying to kill Kratos, and Atreus is now taking up the hobby of raising wolves, one of which dies in the first 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah, let me just interject right there. Like, if you have lost a pet recently, or even for me, which it's been over a year, that scene freaking wrecked me. Mm-hmm. Like, I was this close to just be like, nope, and just turning off the console and walking away because it's so well acted. And it's so well animated, and it is just brutal. But good job, God of Five. Carry on.
Yeah. It really does kind of give you a hint as to the mood of the game
mm-hmm.
from the very beginning. Now, the story for this game is more complex than the last one. The last one, the story was effectively get ashes to mountain. Stuff gets in the way, but that's the story the whole time. In this case, the story is that Thor and Odin show up to Kratos and Atreus' home, and they get into a fight.
Yep.
Great fake out early on, by the way. I loved it. Afterwards, the story is essentially learn more about Ragnarok and either how do we stop it or how do we subvert it. And Kratos is seeking ways to protect his son, no matter what the cost. And Atreus is seeking ways to protect his father, no matter what the cost.
And neither one is going to communicate that openly to the other.
Not even a little bit. The satisfying, heavy gameplay of The Last Offering is back with some welcome additions. The cast is in top form. The story suffers a little bit in the second half of the first act. You know, where it starts to plod. It's like, okay,
yeah,
I can replay God of War 2018 if that's all you're going to give me now.
Right.
You know, but once you get past that little bit, the only slowdowns you're going to have is if you choose to slow down the story for exploration, etc. Character moments feel personal and impactful. Favors, which are like the side quests, they're sometimes funny, and they're sometimes not, but they're usually worth doing. Exploration is rewarded with good loot and deeper lore. And getting around the realms is done using the Mystic Gateways this time, so you don't have to go back to the central Tears Temple location in order to move around. Pro tip, if you find yourself lacking some health or rage, find one of those Mystic Gateways, and it'll refill both.
Oh, nice.
All the way, and you don't even have to go anywhere.
Very cool.
Go to a Mystic Gateway, fill up. My only real complaint is that it is sometimes a real challenge to backtrack.
Oh, yeah.
A place you may have gone to in the story, in the matter of getting to that place, may have been destroyed. So now it's a completely different way back during the free roam. And the map is not nearly so helpful as one would hope. it's a pretty good compass, you know, where the little marker will move to let you know when to turn, but that's only a sometimes thing. It's not a deal breaker, but it flirts with annoyance. Unlike some other heart-rending games, I do plan on playing this one again sometime in 2023. And at the end, I definitely wasn't crying. You were crying. Shut up. Solid A.
All right, cool. Yeah, I just wanted to do a shout-out. Christopher Judge is fantastic as Kratos once again. Most of the voice cast is great, although Richard Schiff...
Oh, God.
...as Odin is just remarkable in both the charm and
the abusive menace.
Yeah, the menace. The sheer menace while being charming is just great.
He got some real Mother Gethel vibes going.
He does. He does. Because on one hand, I'm like, oh, yeah, I kind of like Odin. And then I'm like, oh, no, I don't like Odin.
I don't like Odin. How far have you made so far?
I just finished the first. There are portions of the game, mild spoiler, there are portions of the game where you take control of Atreus as opposed to Kratos.
Mm-hmm.
And I have just finished.
For the first time in the entire series.
Yeah, I've just finished that first field trip, if you will.
Okay. Okay.
So, all right, cool. Ragnarok. Solid.
Yeah, okay. Solid. And I'm 46 hours in.
Nice.
And completed the game, but now I'm going back in because it opens up extra stuff for you to do at the end of the game.
All right. If you go to geekcavepodcast.com, you'll find a couple of reviews. Liz should, by the time this goes up, have the review for Trifox up, which mm-hmm. is kind of like a love letter to the PS2 action games, but in all the right ways. It sounds like a lot of fun. Also, you'll find the review to Gunfire Reborn, which you might have seen on Geek Cave Plays. So what do you get when you combine a first-person shooter with an RPG, add some roguelike elements, also top it off with cartoonish animal characters and a lack of translation for certain text boxes?
A heck of a Geek Cave Plays episode?
Hell if I know, but it is, in fact, Gunfire Reborn. Yeah, it was a good Geek Cave Plays. Go find it. But it's on our YouTube channel. You can find that at geekcavepodcast.com. But yeah, Chinese studio... I'm apologizing in advance. There's no way I'm pronouncing this right. Duoy? D-U-O-Y-I. The way I felt while playing this game was Duoy. So, all right. Duoy Games. Currently, it's available on PC and Xbox platforms. So, if you have Game Pass, you don't have to pay anything for this, and that's probably a good thing. The idea is simple. You and three other players navigate through levels of kinda, sorta dungeon crawling. You're taking out enemies, you're leveling up your weaponry, you collect loot, you find secrets, you die, you do it all over again. And every time you fail, you have a chance to improve your stats, and then you dive back in. It's kind of one of those gameplay loop things, you know? Now, I thought it was varied enough to merit multiple runs. I found myself interested enough to use Gunfire Reborn as a, I have a few minutes to spare and I don't care how well I do kind of game.
Hmm.
You know? The more you play, the more currency you earn that you can use to unlock new characters and abilities, blah, 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 blah. You've done this before. Graphically, you can tell this was made with simplicity in mind. The art style is cel-shaded, but everything looks a bit blocky,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, like, picture high-definition PS1 characters.
Yeah, okay. That's kind, surprisingly apropos.
Kind of like that. Audio is fine. Nothing to rave about. Nothing bad either. The explosions and small noises your characters make, because they're all animals. You start off as a cat with a samurai hat. And they all sound like you expect them to sound. The game does have Chinese roots, and you can definitely tell with a lot of the video and audio design. But also, those Chinese roots are where some of the problems come in. See, at certain points in the game, you find treasure chests. Most of them are just normal, but the red ones apparently offer you a trade, right? Your copper for some kind of perk. And sometimes it'll take your health away and give you more money if you're crazy. But the thing is, sometimes the translation for those options is either inaccurate or it just isn't there at all. And so it's all in Mandarin. And so you gotta like, what do I... There was one chest, I remember it very clearly, where it's like, it looks kind of like a shrine-ish thing. And the options were ask, pray, and then pray earnestly, right? And so I went, okay, I'll pray earnestly. And that took 3/4 of my health away.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently in this game, God's not screwing around. But still, I mean, the issues were small in the grand scheme of things. Its addition to Game Pass is a big boost for it, because I don't think this game would get any ground without Game Pass. So I would say try it before you buy it. So get it on Game Pass if you can. And if not, maybe just give this one a miss. All right. Well, gentlemen, if there are no further topics...
It was created by a madman. Ignored and rejected. Every week it grows. We cannot kill it, for it does not live. Step fast and be wary, or you may fall victim to... Darren's Pile of Shame.
Welcome to the last Pile of Shame entry for 2022.
So, just interrupt.
Yeah.
This past year, you've been doing a particular type of game.
I have.
Like, best of the year.
The year of the games of the year.
And some of those have been pretty amazing.
And some of them have been kind of disappointing.
You know, are you planning a theme for 2023 yet?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I am. I'll go ahead and tell you now. So, next year is 2023.
Right.
Yes.
Next year is, yes. Next year is the 40th anniversary of the launch of the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Okay.
Otherwise known as the Famicom in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So, next year, we are doing the year of the NES.
Okay.
But? Since I have a wide collection of NES games, I'm putting some limits on myself. It can't be anything I've already played.
Ooh.
Ooh.
And no Mario, no Zelda, no Kirby allowed.
So you've played all the Metroid games.
I have.
So you're out those.
Yeah.
You've played Battletoads,
yeah.
Ninja Turtles.
Castlevania.
I haven't played all Castlevanias, and I haven't played all Ninja Turtles. In fact, if everyone sticks around to the end of the episode, I will give you the schedule for next year. And let me just say, some decisions were made.
Okay. Are any of them two players that you need somebody to be here for?
I don't know. I'll have to look at the list.
Let me know.
I made the list a while back. All right. So, welcome to the last Pile of Shame entry of 2022. As we know, it is the year of the games of the year. And we're basically seeing if these games still live up to the hype, now that I'm armed with the power of hindsight. Indiana Jones. Brian Mills. That was the main character from Taken.
Yep, yep.
Benjamin Franklin Gates.
Yep.
From National Treasure.
Yeah.
Nathan Drake.
Mm-hmm.
What do all of these characters have in common?
They're fictional.
They all take their inspiration from the adventure serials of the 1930s.
I mean, yeah, that's also accurate. But I was going to say, they're all good at their jobs, but tend to get weighed down with unnecessary sequels and bad side characters.
Oh, well, that's fairly accurate, too.
So let's talk about Uncharted 4. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uncharted 4, A Thief's End, which was released on the PS4 in 2016 to critical acclaim. I liked it quite a bit when it first came out, but something, or should I say someone, held it back. That someone we are introduced to in a flash forward at the beginning of the game. Adventurer Nathan Drake is on a boat in the middle of a storm at sea. He's being chased by other boats full of guys shooting at him. It's high octane. It is high energy. You're like, yeah, F yeah, let's do it. Also, who the fuck is that guy in the boat with him? Yeah, that is his brother, Sam, who makes his debut in this entry. Nate goes overboard, and the next dozen or so hours of gameplay are filling in the gaps. Both of them were orphans, but Sam was old enough to live on the outside of the orphanage that Nate found himself in. Let's just pretend that the intro to Uncharted 3 never happened,
mm-hmm.
because yeah. That's essentially what we're doing here. He breaks out to team up with Sam to reclaim some of their mother's belongings from an old woman who was a bit of an adventurer herself. She freaks out because they broke into her house and dies from a heart attack. That's a good look. They manage to escape, and they decide to change their real last names from Morgan to Drake, playing off of their mom's theory that Sir Francis Drake may have had descendants after all, and they're off on their new lives. Eventually, they end up in a prison in Panama, partnered with a rich guy named Rafe, who has one of the most punchable faces ever. And
truth,
he wants to help them find pirate legend Henry Avery's lost treasure. If you're not familiar with Henry Avery, look up the Gunsway heist. It is redonkulous. Sam seemingly dies in an escape attempt. And then the events of the first three games plus the PlayStation Vita entry happen, with none of our cast of characters, not even Nathan's wife Elena, or fellow treasure hunter and father figure Victor Sullivan, a.k.a. Sully, no one ever mentions that Nathan has a dead brother. Not once.
Mm-mm.
Never comes up. You would think that that would be an important part of his character, were it something that wasn't completely made up solely for this game. But here we are. And there he is. In fact, Sam's character is probably the biggest problem I have with this game. He's clearly untrustworthy to the audience, but not to anyone he interacts with, which I don't know if y'all have... You know it is. You encounter someone, you just look at him, you're like, I probably shouldn't trust that person. You know? If this guy was any more untrustworthy, he would just have the word liar written on his forehead, and yet they just keep working with him for some reason. And him seemingly having a huge impact on Nathan's life all this time, but again, never being mentioned before now, is a bit of a head-scratcher.
We'll just assume it's every time Nathan was a jerk.
Yeah. Now, it has nothing to do with Troy Baker's performance, okay? He's great. He does a great job. The whole voice cast does a great job. I just think Sam is a bit of a slime ball.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me. Now, in modern day, Nate has left the adventuring behind. He works in the salvage business. His boss keeps wanting him to do a job in Malaysia, but Nate is balking at the idea because they don't have the permits to do it. Long, far cry from, like, Nathan Drake at the first three games, because he's gone legit now. He's gone straight. Then one night, Sam shows up. Out of nowhere. No explanation for where he's been the past 15 years, other than an outright lie, which we'll get to in a minute. Yeah, he's told Nate that he escaped from jail with the help of a drug lord who has now threatened him. Either find Henry Avery's treasure and give him half, or Sam is a dead man. Now, a reasonable person would have taken Sam home, introduced him to Elena, and the three of them would have come up with a solution to the problem.
Same.
But that's a reasonable person.
Yep.
Nate.
That would be a hallmark of, say, a healthy relationship.
Yeah. Nate, however, eschews a literal decade of character growth. He calls up Elena, lies about suddenly taking the Malaysia job, and then takes off with Sam on a search that includes the Scottish Highlands and Madagascar before finding the remnants of Avery's secret pirate utopia, Libertalia. He also lied to Elena about where he was all the way, like multiple stops, calling him, it's going to take a few more days, until she inevitably catches him because, remember, she's an investigative journalist, you idiot. Confronts him in a motel that the Drakes and Sully are using to lie low. That's the only part of the story so far that makes any bit of damn sense, is that Elena finds them with no trouble at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's like, of course. Now, we find out eventually that Sam lied about the whole prison escape thing. Rafe actually just bailed him out of prison. There was no big guns-toting escape, as Sam had told him to make himself sound like a badass. And they worked together until Sam realized he couldn't find the treasure without Nate, so he double-crosses Rafe. Now, eventually, Sam is caught, forced to work with Nate and his team of commandos, led by a very charismatic Nadine Ross. Nate is pushed off a cliff and somehow survives, thanks to Elena, who again found him, because she's an investigative journalist. Nathan, you idiot. In fact, chapter 17, for better or worse, is the best chapter in this game. There are 22 chapters in the game, and it's really good at 17.
Is that wow. The elevator ride?
That's when Elena shows up.
Okay.
Yeah. Elena shows up, rescues Nate from probable death, and then they work together to try and rescue Sam, who does not deserve it. And they talk out the whole situation that his stupidity, put them in. And here's the best part. It's not suddenly all better. Mm-hmm. It's handled realistically. And that is one of Naughty Dog's, that's the developer's, core strengths. They write realistic characters for the most part, except for Sam. Elena does not immediately forgive Nate. The tension between them is palpable, but you can also see that love for each other still there. She and Sully are two of the best written characters in all of video games, and I will fight you on that.
You don't need to.
Yeah, yeah. Now, in the end, of course, the day is saved. The bad guys are stopped. Nadine becomes a protagonist in the spinoff Lost Legacy.
Excellent game.
It is overall a better game than this one. Although, I gotta ask, like, what made Nadine a protagonist other than Rafe betrayed her too? She still left Nathan to die. So, whatever. But anyway,
Chloe
I digress.
Chloe likes her.
Yeah. And we get an epilogue playing as Nate and Elena's daughter, which is also great.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. Made me want an Uncharted series with her once she's old enough to do adventuring stuff, of course. Oh, also, Sam and Sully are now treasure hunting partners for some reason.
Reasons. Poor Sully.
Yeah. Man, Sully is...
heart of gold, that guy.
I want to grow up to be Sully. So that's the story part of it.
You
want
to hang out with Sam? Huh? And you want to hang out with Sam in your
no,
Twilight
if I'm
years?
Sully, I'm dumping him out of that plane the first chance I get.
Mm. Yeah. Buckle your seatbelt, kid.
And then he just banks right.
You're goddamn right.
Sully's got some of the best lines in the whole damn franchise.
I'm sweating like a hooker in church.
You brought a hooker to church?
Yeah, why not?
So that's the story, but is the gameplay any good? Well, it's Uncharted. So, yeah, it's pretty good. If you like parkour, collectible hunting, hiding behind chest high walls. Are you reading my notes?
No, I don't need to. I played them.
Hiding behind chest high walls where you shoot at enemies who are wearing simple t-shirts but can somehow take 8 bullets to the chest. Now, I really have no problem with the base gameplay for the most part. It's the introduction of new elements that Naughty Dog thinks you need to have drilled into your head. Like, for example, hey, here's a rope. Use that damn thing everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look, a convenient hook for your rope. Oh, look, a convenient tree branch for your rope. Oh, look, rope. But but that also is kind of like a side effect, it backfires in that many times you'll give another character a boost, right, to get to a higher platform. And then they're like, hold on, I'll find something for you to use. And I'm like, well, I have a rope. And you're right up there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, also, here's a Jeep. You know what a Jeep needs? A winch. You know what a winch is? A rope for the front. Now you've got a lot of muddy roads that you can use the winch, your Jeep rope, to drive up. Oh, also, Tomb Raider seems to have done well with the climbing axe, so we'll do that. But we'll make it a Python in the most egregious case of you can copy my homework, but don't make it obvious that I've ever seen. And let's not forget all of the rug burn. And by that, I mean sliding on your ass to get everywhere. There's a hill. I'm going to slide down it. Then I'm going to jump off at the last second. There's another hill. Here's 9 series of hills. And so on and so forth. And the problem is, the characters directly reference how often you're doing that at one point. And if the characters are doing that, the developers know they've done it too much.
It's called lampshading.
Yeah.
It's when you draw attention to something that is obviously wrong, but because they're making sure that you know that they know it, it makes it okay.
No, it's not. also, taking the game to a semi-open world design, at least in certain hubs, was a bit weird too, because it gives you the impression that the developers wanted to do more with that idea than they actually got to. I don't know if it was a limitation on the PS4 or what, but when you are approaching a certain spot in, I don't remember if it was the Scottish Highlands, it's the first time in the Jeep, and you've got all this open area until you realize, no, a lot of it's not. But they give you the impression that it's all open area. Also, Naughty Dog, I know that you're probably not listening to this, but if you are, because some of your colleagues do, some freaking consistency would be nice. If Nate can survive falling like 7 stories in a cutscene, I should be able to drop 10 feet and not die instantly. I'm just throwing that out there.
But is did it you tuck and roll?
No. But is it there you go. Is it the platforming route that you want me to take? Not necessarily. But also, it's 10 feet. Let me climb back up if that's not where you want me to go, instead of just instant death. They also tried to make melee combat more of a thing in this one.
Mm.
I could never figure out the rhythm you're supposed to go for there. And the boss fights with Nadine just make you feel impotent anyway. So even if that's just to show how tough she is, it just didn't really work. At least the visuals and the soundtrack are amazing.
They are.
Yeah, it's really pretty. And it sounds really pretty, too. Now, Naughty Dog is excellent at their job, okay? They craft amazing pieces of art from a gameplay and storytelling perspective, as long as a new and shiny project doesn't come along to distract them. It happened to Jak and Daxter, it happened to Crash Bandicoot, and then it happened to Uncharted when The Last of Us showed up. And I'm pretty sure after they've remade Last of Us for the 5th time, it'll happen to Last of Us when they come up with The First of Us, or whatever comes after that. Uncharted 4 ultimately feels like something that was made out of obligation, rather than a desire to tell a story. And despite that, it manages to be worth the journey based on the strength of most of the cast. Now, if it seems I'm being hard on this game, the old saying goes, you hurt the ones you love the most. And I love these characters. Except for Sam. Nathan and Elena getting a happy ending, seeing all of the little details included in the epilogue in their home, you know, all of that stuff reminded me, honestly, of all of the emotions I felt following these characters on these adventures. There's a scene in Uncharted 2 where it looks like Elena might die. And my wife can confirm, I was muttering at the television, you effers better not do it. You know? I'm pretty sure that these characters are never going to get to have new adventures again, so it feels like I'm hanging out with a bunch of close friends for maybe the last time. So the hiccups in this game, I guess, just feel a bit sharper, if that makes sense. You know? Mm-hmm. They're ruining it. You're ruining the moment. Uncharted 4 won Outstanding Character Animation in a Video Game at the 44th Annie Awards. It won Outstanding Visual Effects in a Real-Time Project at the 15th Visual Effects Society Awards. Outstanding Achievement in Video Game Writing at the 67th Writers Guild of America Awards. It won the South by Southwest Gaming Awards, 5 out of 8 nominations, including Video Game of the Year, Excellence in Narrative, and Most Memorable Characters. The game also received 8 nominations at the 13th British Academy Games Awards, ultimately winning Best Game, Best Console Game, and Best Action Adventure Game. But for me, while as a whole, it is still a pretty good experience, it's going to be a long, long time before I revisit this one. While the original trilogy will probably continue to get a look from me every couple of years. Sure, be like me in this case, but maybe just once, play it so you can see how Nathan Drake's days of adventuring finally come to an end. At least until they come up with another excuse to do another one. That being said, let's get into what I teased earlier, the 2023 Pile of Shame lineup. It's the year of the NES. January's podcast, DuckTales 2.
Woo!
That's right. They made a sequel. It came they out did. Right at the end of the NES's lifespan, and very few people played it, but we're gonna. February, Fox's Peter Pan and the Pirates. And you can tell there's a quality dip already. March, Abadox, which is a shoot 'em up, except the spaceship is inside the stomach of a giant monster.
Hmm.
April, Dick Tracy. No more needs to be said. May, Knight Rider. Yeah. June, the game that Jumpman debuted in, Wrecking Crew. July, Popeye. August, Mickey Mousecapade.
Okay. Okay.
September, RoboCop, the video game.
You poor soul.
Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. October, Castlevania 3.
Spooky.
November, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Manhattan Project.
Okay.
And December, Adventure Island 3.
Three? What more could be said?
Yeah. So there you go. There's the year of the NES. May God have mercy on my soul.
Hmm.
Good Yikes. Luck, you poor bastard.
Yep. If there's no further business...
At some point, we should get a score.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good versus bad versus meh for your year of the best games of the year.
All right, yeah. Well, be sure to listen to our other podcasts, including Deep Cave Comics, which went up yesterday, and Deep Cave Movies, which goes up tomorrow, if you listen to them in order of release and not binging. Hi, Paul. You Want Me to Watch What? Also is one of our podcasts, and so is the Week 3 podcast, and this month's Week 3 is the Golden Justin Awards. We also do the occasional TLDR. You can find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/Geek Cave Podcast for live streams when I can be bothered to do them. You can also check out Geek Cave Plays and Retromantics on our YouTube channel, as well as Geek Cave Kids. And you can also find all of that, along with links to our social media channels, at geekcavepodcast.com. While you're at our website, be sure to join our Discord server, where you can chat with us one-on-one, meet other Geek Cave fans, share your ideas, and get early access to each new episode. For Kent, Justin, and Chad, I'm Darren. Remember, if you give someone Home Alone for the SNES as a Christmas present, you are a monster, and everyone is a geek for something.